Spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. The busy holiday season is here, and Uncommon Goods makes it less stressful with incredible hand-picked gifts for everyone that's on your list, all in one spot. Gifts that spark joy, wonder, delight, and that it's exactly what I wanted kind of feeling. They scour the globe for original, handmade, absolutely remarkable things. Somehow they know exactly the perfect gift for every single person you know. Here's a few of my favorite gifts that I found on their site, like Smokey the Bear socks, corporate nonsense generator, holiday cocktail bombs, or Caribou Cocoa Buddies set of two. What about an acoustic frog amplifying phone speaker? Uncommon Goods has it all. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made right in the US of A. They have the most meaningful, out-of-the-ordinary gifts anywhere. They even have gifts you can personalize. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice.
To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/theory. That's uncommongoods.com/theory for 15% off. Or just check the show notes of this podcast. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object.
Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery. Not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
On the evening of November 5th, 1975, Mike Rogers was making the return trip with his logging crew from their work site within the Apache Sitgreaves National Forest. Rogers stopped the truck when he spotted a luminous object moving through the treetops that did not appear to be of earthly origins. As the floating object moved toward the truck, one of the crew decided to try and get a closer look. Travis Walton left the vehicle, and as he approached the craft, he was struck by a blue light that hurled him to the ground with seemingly lethal force. Afraid for his life and the lives of those of the crew still in the truck, Rogers slammed the vehicle into drive and fled from the site, thinking he had just been witness to his friend's death. After an exhaustive search by police and volunteers of the area where they had encountered the UFO, no trace of Walton was found. 5 days later, Walton's brother-in-law received a phone call. Travis had resurfaced in a town 30 miles from where he had last been seen and believed only a few hours had passed since he had been gone. This case file, the theorists keep their eyes on the fire in the skies in the Travis Walton UFO encounter.
Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing Case File
98.
The story of Travis Walton.
Yeah.
I'm Braden.
I'm Zell.
I'm Dan.
I'm Andrew.
He's back.
He's back.
Back again.
He's back. Andrew, I know you got it. Before we get anything going, a little preface, why don't you just give us a little tale from the east side?
You want a little something, something?
A little update, please.
A little update. How things have been going?
I've been gone for a bit, boys, because things have been a little wild. Things have been a little crazy. There's a new designer drug on the streets.
Designer drug.
Orange Crush.
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 But seriously, like, it's been fucking nuts, man. People have been dropping like flies. And so, like, I don't know if everybody knows. Obviously, you boys know. The big deal with the opioid crisis was the fact that they were lacing all the opioids with fentanyl.
Right.
Yeah. And all it took was like the most minute little granule of fentanyl in the people's heroin to fucking put them down further than they could be ever with heroin. Right. So
right.
People were dropping like flies. Everybody's panicking. Everything's crazy. And then it kind of died out a little bit. It hasn't really died out here. It always kind of stayed pretty consistent, but it was crazy. It was like within fucking 2 or 3 days, people just started dropping. And, you know, we have Narcan, which is an antagonist to the opioid. So fentanyl is opioid based. You give them enough Narcan, they come up out of this, you know what I mean? Out of this respiratory depressant state that they're in. Well, now that they've laced this drug with a benzo, and I don't know if you guys know what a benzo is, but it's like
nope.
The same stuff that's in a lot of anxiety medication, and it's a sedative.
Right.
So what's happening now is they've put this fucking orange benzo in all their drugs. That's why they're calling it an orange crush. These people are going down with the fucking heroin that's laced with fentanyl, and then they have this heavy sedative on board. And we can reverse the fucking the respiratory depressant state, but we can't reverse the fucking benzo. So these people are fucking zombies, man. Like, the emergency rooms are piled with these fucking people in this like vegetative state. And I'm talking like 10, 15, 20 of them at a time.
Fuck.
It's fucking nuts, man. Like, people are dropping like flies. It happened. The first case we had was 2 weeks ago. And since then, I myself, in the past fucking 2 weeks, have done 45 cases of this.
Holy shit.
Whoa. Wow.
45 fucking cases. It's been nuts.
That is fucking crazy.
Dude, it's nuts. And like, it's really crazy because you know what I mean? You get a chance to talk to these people and they legitimately think that this is purpose-based. They think people are doing this on purpose.
So they have no idea.
Like, there's a lot of,
they have no idea that they're about to do it. Just
oh no, that's unlucky. The fucking ridiculous part is these guys are vets, man. These guys are all ghetto vets that have been shooting up and snorting and bumping and whatever for fucking God knows how long.
Yeah.
They know their drug. They can look at their down, look at it and be like, I know there's fentanyl in there, and they still fucking bang it. They look at the drug and they know it's Orange Crush and they still do it because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because their need for that is, it way outweighs any risk.
They need the fix.
You know what I mean? Yeah, they just need, they don't give a fuck, man. It doesn't make any difference to them.
Jesus.
Man, how good are these drugs? That's what I want to know.
It's either that or how much pain are these people in that they need the fucking relief from it?
You know what I mean? My thing is, like, if the drug is meant to be sold, it's a really shitty drug then if it's like turning all these people into zombies.
Like, well, Dan,
is this some kind of drug that they're putting out there to kill all the homeless people?
Well, that's a lot of these people, honest to God, believe. Like, you pick them up and you have a conversation with them. They honestly believe that they're being killed off because they want to gentrify the area.
Sinister.
And they it's all coming from fucking China. And they think that there's fucking well, Dan probably doesn't know, but what's right next to the fucking downtown east side, or what's right in the heart of the downtown east side other than fucking
Chinatown?
Playland?
Exactly.
Playland?
That's right? Where it's coming through. I mean, it's not that far fetched. I think it would be like something, because you said like Vancouver, it's got a real big like property kind of problem, right? They have a lot of Chinese people coming in and buying properties and driving
big time
a lot of the residents out, right?
Dude, if you saw the fucking architecture that's wasted on the downtown east side, man, it's fucking crazy. Like, there's the most beautiful buildings you've ever seen that are just fucking shit houses, basically.
Yeah.
Just giant piss houses. That's all they are. It's fucking sad.
It's actually crazy. It's got to rival, you know, some of the worst homeless problems in the world.
In the civilized world.
It is a hardcore solution.
Western
world. That is really far to be like, we're going to murder all the homeless people by giving them. But I don't know, you know, it seems like something they could probably do. If you already have that network.
Well, put it this way. If these drug dealers are making these drugs and they've noticed, okay, you know what? We're killing off some of our fucking, some of our clientele or lots of our clientele. Why do they keep getting fucking stronger?
It's true.
They keep getting stronger and stronger, and we don't have enough Narcan to fucking counteract it. Like, it's nuts.
Hmm. Weird.
But I'll be honest, that's not even the most fucking impressive thing I've seen.
Okay.
went to a call the other day for somebody having chest pain. Come banging on the door. Turns out we went to the wrong house. Guy opens up the door. His entire body and his entire fucking room, his room's not very big, but I shit you not, his entire body from head to toe and his entire fucking room covered in peanut butter. Like, I'm talking like fucking lathered.
Did he say got any jelly?
No, but he's looking at me like I'm the idiot for knocking on his door.
You're
like,
the weird one.
Yeah, he's like, what do you want? Like, what's the problem here? I'm like, oh, fuck, man, I don't know. Like, fuck.
I have no idea what the problem is. There's a problem here, but I don't know what it is. You know,
I was looking for a dog. I was worried about animal abuse, but that's just like, that's fucked up, man. Anyway, sorry for derailing it, boys.
Let's continue on here. Love those stories.
Love the tales from the east side.
Why don't we get right into some space news? I got a whole bunch here. One Zelly went talked about hidden. Oh, this is so old. I was about to say it, and then I caught the date. It was posted. I was like, no. Astronomers get a rare direct look at an exoplanet thanks to new telescope techniques.
Oh, shit.
And then the preface of this is, telescopes are more than just lenses and mirrors.
Really?
I was like, oh, my God. The new kind of observation using optical...
Oh, fuck. Here you go, Brain.
Interferometry... with the gravity instrument is another important tool, as it can measure the light from exoplanets directly rather than based on how they change the light from stars they orbit. So it's a technical achievement, said the study's first author, Sylvester Lacour, team leader and researcher at the CNRS Observatoire de Paris. We've done something that nobody could do before. So it's kind of cool. We got some new satellite forms, getting some better shots at exoplanets. Maybe we'll get some better shots at exoplanets in the Goldilocks zone coming soon.
Gotta happen. I got one here. NASA's Parker Solar Probe makes second daring flyby of the sun.
Awesome. This one's so surprising to me because when we first broke this and our name's on that thing.
Yep.
I thought it was just crashing into the sun. I thought its mission was fly directly into the sun, and they were gonna take information along the way. So then when I was like, second flyby, I was like, that motherfucker didn't fly into the sun?
It probably no. Eventually,
it's doing a bunch of circles around it.
Eventually, it's gonna get first, too close, and then it's gonna get burned up. But yeah, this one was 15 million miles away from the sun, or 24 million kilometers. And that is pretty much the same as the first one on November 5th. But they're hoping to eventually get it down to about 6 million kilometers. So still really far from the sun, but yeah. closer than we've ever been.
It's like the fastest man-made object in the solar system right now.
Yeah, it's going 343,000 kilometers per hour at the moment.
Whew, just trucking.
So what's that, 1/10 the speed of light pretty much, isn't it? Or no,
how fast?
No one. No, what's the speed of light? 300,000 kilometers per second, something like that. 299,000 something. Anyway,
yeah,
it's going. It's humming. It's going. It's going. It's cool.
So, yeah. That's about right.
About that, something like that.
Well, it's 299,792,458 meters per second. So it'd be like about 300.
Okay, so divide that. Yeah, okay, cool.
This one's a cool one. Composite overwrap 3D printed rocket thruster endures extreme heat. So NASA, seeing if they can use 3D printing, They made a rocket thruster, tested 2,400 pounds of thrust out of the 3D printed copper rocket thrust chamber with composite overwrap to see if the uniquely made hardware could withstand the heat and structural loads from the testing. And it did. So that could mean...
There's so much innuendo in that. Like, I can't get over it right now.
Structural load.
Thrust. Loads.
Yeah. Like, it's, oh my 200, God. 2,400 pounds of thrust.
Force.
Yeah. Yeah. Rocket thrust chamber.
It's the sexiest space test ever.
Yeah. and it could... endure the heat. so that you know, if this works and this is a viable model, it's sure going to cut the cost of making a lot of these things for space.
Well, and that's going to lead to, as they say, they want to like set up those 3D printers in space, mine asteroids or planets, and then build the rockets and shit in space. So you don't have to get away from the gravity. So it's way easier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you guys see the video I posted in Discord of the 3D printed robots they want to put on Mars? Like, 3D printing is going to get us so far. It's going to be amazing.
It's going to be unreal.
Well, there's a concept that one company's put forth of like they're going to basically land a bunch of 3D print, like mono wheel 3D printing robots on Mars. And they would have those robots basically build, like construct like infrastructure and like shelters for like astronauts when they get to Mars, so everything will pretty much be prefabricated like when they get there, so they can start production and like they'd have these shelters kind of set up built out of the Martian regolith, which is like the Martian soil.
Yeah.
And they would build these kind of dome structures that inside they would place the inflatable they're going to build up like these inflatable kind of structures that would just like expand, and then they'd be kind of like self-contained or somewhat self-contained. And so you could put astronauts. So everything would be ready as soon as the astronauts land, which is huge because I've never even really thought of that for me personally. I was like, I thought they just land there and it would just like suck. And they just had to put everything together. But it's like, yeah, put robots on there. They could do everything, get everything ready. That's actually pretty cool.
Humans land just right to work. Don't have to build
it. Just had to turn, just turn stuff on. And you're like,
oh, hello, robot overlords. What do you need me to do?
That's cool.
What do we got? That's all I got for space news. Anyone else got space news?
That's it for me.
Let's wrap that up.
Wrap it up.
Why don't you fire up the Randomatron? I was digging the fan stories. Why don't you fire up another, see if you can hit genre fan story.
Gotcha. All right. And we're thinking at it right now.
Fan submission.
So just a quick little preface there. This one is from a fan who wishes to remain anonymous, so hopefully they didn't write their name in the story somewhere. They gave a couple experiences, but I'm going to read just the first experience. Hey, guys, I'm just going to get right into it. I've had multiple strange experiences involving lights in the sky over the past year, and these are my two most important stories. If you guys choose to share it on the show, please keep it anonymous. I'm so sorry for how long they are. I just want to include every detail I can so that maybe you guys can help me figure out what the hell I keep seeing. First experience. I went on a spontaneous overnight trip with my best friend to Point Reyes, California, around March of last year. Point Reyes itself is a really cute town, about half an hour from the beach, with a huge creek connecting to the ocean. We went there to see the shipwreck, which the small town is known for. We arrived at around 5 p.m., had some dinner, figured out where we were staying for the night, and then took a hit of acid for some added fun.
Nice.
Well.
So immediately,
there goes all the credibility.
I don't want to say that's going to discredit the story. Let's wait. Let's pass judgment.
Hey, not necessarily if you do hallucinogens.
Yeah,
maybe what you're seeing is this, you're peering into a different reality, and it's actually real, but no one else will ever know unless you're doing the drugs with you. benefit of the doubt.
Hit it out just for some added fun. I know that drug involvement can really discount a story, but what we saw and experienced that night really cannot be attributed to the substance, in my opinion. I just had to include it for honesty. Well, we appreciate that. At around 11 p.m., we decided to go for a nighttime walk along the creek to see the stars and see the shipwreck again. We tried to go onto Google Maps for directions, and neither of our phones worked. They just kept glitching, and the app kept closing. We thought that was weird, but decided to try and walk anyway, even though we didn't know where we were going. About half an hour in, without seeing the shipwreck, we felt lost and decided to head back to the hotel. We made it to the parking lot and decided to sit down and stargaze and stare out at the water. I was counting stars when suddenly I saw it. A bright orb about the size of a very large beach ball was floating slowly over the top of the trees. This ball of light was close, hovering right across the street from us, barely over the power lines. It was changing colors, alternating between a light purple and red. I got this huge wave of calm when I saw it, which is honestly one of the weirdest parts of the story to me. Very calmly, I pointed it out to my friend, asking him if he saw it too. And we kept talking to each other to make sure we were seeing the same thing. Suddenly, there were more of them, all trailing behind the first one at uneven intervals, all slowly blinking different colors. There were six in total, each going at their own pace, floating toward the mountains in the distance. There was no one else around, and these things were completely silent. I had my phone on me, so I tried to open the camera app, but to no avail. My phone wouldn't even let me unlock it. I stared right at the first one, trying to remember as much as I could, when I suddenly started saying some weird shit in a sort of robotic, emotionless voice to my friend. I was telling him to be calm, that they wouldn't hurt us, that we were safe. I don't really fully remember saying this, but he swore to me that I said it later on when we recounted the story to each other. What I remember is kind of blanking out while watching them until I heard a voice in my head telling me to go back to the hotel. I don't know how else to explain it. My body just turned around on its own and started walking back to the hotel. My friend later told me that he got the same weird feeling, and we both walked back. We spent all night trying to figure out what we saw and couldn't come up with anything. I can't even tell you how long we saw them for because the tail end of my memory is so foggy. They were moving at a walking pace, so I think we saw them for about a full 2 minutes? Both of our phones didn't work correctly until morning, and I have no idea how to explain that. If I had been alone, even I would have blamed the drugs. But the fact that we both saw the same thing at the same time really makes me think otherwise.
Cool.
Oh, that's a cool story.
I mean, that's a fucking wild story, but acid's a hell of a drug.
Yeah, that's a hard thing. The overwhelming calm. I would kind of like to know more. If you listen to this, this is your story. I'm not going to say the name. Let us know, when did you take the drugs? Is this late in? Are you coming down? Is it building up? I'm kind of interested in that. It's interesting. The feeling wild. Of calm, you know, it sounds like you lose some time there. You know, it's got some, you know, it's just hard with the drugs. That's our thing.
Yeah, but what about a lot of people who take hallucinogens all tell similar stories. So one of the theories is that when you take these, it's like a door of perception. And you're actually experiencing stuff differently than you would if you weren't on the drugs. So maybe you are actually seeing like some type of entity, but no one's going to believe you because like, well, you're fucking on drugs. But maybe it's the drugs that allow you to contact.
Are opening the third eye or whatever.
Or whatever. Yeah. Interdimensional, like the doors of perception, whatever you want to call it. So that's a big, that's one of the big theories, especially people who do like DMT and like really powerful ones.
Yeah. I guess you hear a lot of the same stuff. So
I'd have to know what time of year it was. Because if it's all floating at uneven intervals, like you could have actually been seeing something, not exactly, you know, something supernatural or something beyond the veil or however you want to put it. But I mean, it could be something as simple as like sky lanterns. Could have been somebody just letting off a bunch of sky lanterns and they were moving through the sky. And, you know, with your altered perception, it just kind of looked that way. The colors kind of meshed together or whatever. But it could be something like that. I'd have to know what time of year it was. Maybe, I don't know if people do that. I know people do it over in like Thailand and things like that. But sometimes people do it here for certain things. So it could have been something like that.
Could easily been that because, yeah, when you're on acid, stuff does tend to blend in its own weird way. All into, it depends how much you do, I guess, but it can be quite profound, like how much stuff actually changes. So who knows? Cool story either way.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sending that in. If you got stories, you want to send them. I'm not going to guarantee we're going to read everyone, but we'll throw them in the randomtron. If they pop up, we'll give them a read. Just let us know if you want us to use your name or if we can use your name. And if what you want us to keep censored. I see that this one came with a second experience, but maybe we'll save that for another time if it pops back up.
Put it back in.
Well, plug that one back in for part two. Now, let's get into the Travis. And also, if you can keep the word photography or photographing out of your stories.
Really help us all.
Great.
Any words over four syllables. You know,
keep them up.
Don't go that far. you'll break Brayden's brain.
So I'm probably gonna read. I'm gonna wear a reading rainbow shirt or like Hooked on Phonics shirt to AlienCon. I think. Let's start. So Travis Walton UFO incident. What's this about, Dan? What do we got going on with? What's up with Mr. Walton?
Well, Travis Walton. UFO incident is probably one of the most well-documented cases of UFO abduction that we have. There's a lot of bits and pieces to it, and a lot of weird stuff happened during that time. But most people will probably remember it if the first time you saw it was the Fire in the Sky movie from, I think it was 1995, which was a great movie. I watched that movie when I was a kid, and it scared the shit out of me for like a week.
Yeah.
Could not sleep.
The movie's loosely based because from my understanding and, you know, reading, Walton wasn't exactly impressed with Hollywood's rendition of his story.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit different. But the guy who did direct it actually went on to direct a lot of stuff. He directed an episode of The X-Files. He did a couple episodes of The Expanse now.
It's a good show.
So I just want to point out, you said episode. Because I'm always catching shit.
I didn't even notice. When Dan's talking, I don't even pay attention.
Dan said episode, not episode. So let him have it, everyone.
Oh, no, you got me. Oh, no.
Dan, you idiot.
Oh, God.
More like Dan blows.
Raiden swings and misses.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you know, I got to try to get mine in when I can.
So let's go ahead and take everybody back to November 5th, 1975, when Travis Walton and six other members of his logging crew, which included Mike Rogers, Ken Peterson, John Goulette, Steve Pierce, and Alan Dallas, and Dwayne Smith. All these men lived in Snowflake, Arizona, and they were leaving a job that evening from a place in northeastern Arizona's Apache Sitgreaves National Forest. And that evening when they were returning, they're all in one truck. And on their way back in the sky through the trees, they described later what they saw as a luminous object that was shaped like a flattened disc. And as they recount it, Travis Walton was the first and only one to get out of the truck and actually approach the craft. Now, he kind of later people asked him, of course, like, you know, whose first reaction is to see a flying saucer and you're going to get out of the truck with your buddies and go look at it? There's kind of what I can see. There's kind of conflicting reports as to whether he did it again, like he was influenced in some way. Walton says that he just felt, you know, odd. Like he just wanted to get closer and see it. But when his friends kind of recount the story, they say that he almost moved it seemed like he was moving against his will, like he was enthralled as by some force or compelled to get out of the.
Yes, that's what they said. But in like his account, like at Contact in the Desert, he tells a story and he's like he says that his friends think that, but really he confirms that he wanted to do it for whatever reason.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, there's some people who are like, hey, let's stay in the truck. And there's people who are, let me get out and take a better look.
$1,000.
I would be in the truck. Nope.
No, $1,000 says fucking that's exactly what Mr. Conspiracy would do.
Oh, 100%. Out, or, oh, 100%, yeah, 100%, man.
He'd get out.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
You think you're fucking
he'd
tough?
He'd get out and full sprint. Yeah, yeah, full sprint.
Fucking
boys,
you
coming? You coming?
Yeah. Yeah. Not a fucking chance.
Yeah.
So, as he got out of the truck and approached the craft, I guess he got pretty close. And what happened next was that he was described as being thrown to the ground by a bluish beam. And this is kind of where the fire in the sky name comes from, because it looked, his friend said it looked something like a blue flame, and it knocked him out on the ground, gone. And his friends, understandably shocked by this, they thought he was dead.
Well, yeah,
they thought this thing had killed him.
He described it as what he thought, what he came to reason afterwards, he thought it was some type of static charge from the craft that turned into a blue beam. But yeah, he said he got thrown like 20 feet. And his buddies just took off because, like, well, he's toast. Travis is dead. We're out of here.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure he went like ragdoll when that thing hit him. Like, yeah, it napped him back and boom, like they were sure that he was dead.
Yeah, they're like, there's because no way that he could
how
survive.
How would you explain any of that?
Yeah.
And to be honest, we would have left Mr. Conspiracy already as soon as he got out of the truck.
Well, peace, bud.
Right. So, like, I don't blame them at all. 100%. No. You see your buddy get blasted by some floating disc, you're like, well, we should probably leave and then we'll come back and pick up his body.
We probably would have left him up there anyways, even if he didn't get hit by anything.
Yeah.
Hey, go check that out, buddy.
Well, we probably would have done the exact same thing that the rest of the crew did, because after they left, I mean, they felt they couldn't leave their friend back there and they went back to go look for him, but he was gone. They went back to the exact spot where they had seen him get dropped and he was gone along with the craft. From here, you have the stories kind of diverge. You have his friends talking about what happened afterwards. Immediately afterwards, they went to the closest town to where they were, the closest gas station, I believe. And they were contacted the local sheriff's office. And here, the sheriff's office, they called and made a report to one of the deputy sheriffs that their friend was gone. They tried to recount it as best they could, exactly how they had seen it. And I mean, you can imagine how a, small town deputy sheriff would kind of react to this.
You guys fucking murdered him, didn't you?
That was the first thing on his mind when he got there. When they finally got, like, the sheriffs actually got out there, the deputy sheriff said when he got on the scene, like, he saw the men and how they looked, and they were in various, sorts of disarray. Some of them were just kind of walking around with the shocked look on their face. Two of them, I think he said two of them were crying because they figured their friend was dead. Mm-hmm. And these guys were all good friends. I mean, they had had their troubles before, but was not something.
Two things. They weren't all good friends, because one of the guys, Travis Walton's like, I didn't even fucking know that guy. Everyone says we were friends. He just started like 2 days earlier.
Right.
He's like, I'd never met him before. He's like, he wasn't my friend at all. He goes, I saw an interview with him. And he's like, everyone says we were all these best buds, but he's like, I didn't even know this one guy. He's like, I didn't even know him. I knew him just for a couple days. And then secondly,
wait,
when
all
out
the guys
there,
or Mike? I thought Mike Rogers. I was pretty sure Mike Rogers and Travis Walton had known each other for a while.
Yes, no. Reports had come out that they were all friends, but one of the guys had just started working for the company, so it's like. Walton was like, I had no idea who this one guy is. Like, yeah, I'm really good. I'm buddies with this guy. I know these other guys, but like, to say we were all the best of buds, like this one guy just started where I'd never met him like 3 days earlier.
Right.
Yeah. But Mike Rogers, who is like the boss, Mike Rogers, who is the
new Travis. The
him and Travis had been working together for about like at least 10 years, I think.
Yeah. But they said the sheriff was like, all right, guys, like, boys, just show me where the body is, right? Tell me, like, show it is so we can get this over with already.
Yeah.
Show
the me. Deputy, like, I saw an interview with the deputy, and he's like, yeah, the first thing I did was try to get close enough to him so I could smell if they had any
booze,
you know, any odors of alcohol coming off them and things like that. Because how are you going to believe this kind of story where these guys are somebody just disappears? Nobody just disappears and gets taken up by a UFO. That's not something that happens around there. They figured that, you know, that this guy had, his friends had murdered him, whether intentionally or unintentionally.
Yeah, it could have easily been a login accident. That's probably what they're thinking, like, oh, the login accident, something happened, he got killed, they didn't want to get blamed, so they probably hit him. That's probably the first thing they thought, the sheriff.
So that's what the friends who had made it out, they had to deal with the police for 5 days. And in those 5 days, Travis Walton was experiencing something else. During these 5 days, he's not sure how long he was up there. Walton said that after an uncertain amount of time, he woke up and he thought he was in a hospital. He said he had light shining on him. He was in a lot of pain. And when he managed to kind of, his eyes weren't, he said, I think he said a couple times his eyes didn't seem to be working normally. They were, everything was kind of blurry. But when he woke up, he did manage to take a look around, and he described seeing these three creatures who were staring at him that had what he did, you know, he described as brown quarter-sized pupils. So they weren't like the giant grays that people had described before, probably the popular depiction of extraterrestrials. They were a little bit different.
Quarter-sized pupils, mm-hmm. Like a big pupil, though. I got a quarter right here.
Yeah. Nobody
that's
can see that.
That's a big pupil.
Big-ass pupil.
Yeah.
I mean, those are big pupils, you know, but they're not the huge, big black, you know.
The almond eyes. Big black.
Oblong eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is how he described them. And they had marshmallow-colored skin. So I'm assuming really well. I mean, you'd almost say, like, Zell has marshmallows.
I take that as a compliment. Thank you very much. I work hard on that marshmallow skin all winter long.
Yeah, he's about as soft as a marshmallow, too.
Oh. Rain is firing tonight.
Oh, yes. I got to give it every now and then.
It's a good thing I have my mouth guard in here right now, or I'd really be getting it.
Oh, yeah.
No one knows. I'm missing my front tooth right now, but I have like a fake one and it's hard to talk. So I'm sure I'm going to get beat.
Start whistling at him. But Walton, you know, understandably, he freaked out when he saw these creatures, and he tried to fight them off with whatever strength that he had in his body at the time, and managed to actually evade them. And he escaped out of this room into another room, which he said that he found what looked to be a chair with some sort of what he identified as a control panel. And he described it like his feeling as he was exhausted, because, I mean, you would be if you were just run away from a bunch of aliens and, I don't know.
After getting fucking probed for 5 days.
Yeah, if that's what, yeah, and you were unconscious for 5 days. So he's weak, he sat down in it, and he said that when he sat down in this chair, a collection of lights filled the room. And I believe he referred to it as the Star Room. And he felt like this was some sort of, display for some kind of star map, which it could be. I mean, you see it in science fiction all the time. There's a kind of like a navigation room where you kind of sit in a chair and you can kind of move it. And he said there was even a lever on the side of the chair that you could control the star map. And that was displayed in front of him, which is kind of something we've that has been a concept before, but I don't think it had really been in. You know, this was 1975. I don't think they really had kind of this stuff in popular culture and things like that.
Right.
Well, when did Star Wars come out?
Star Trek.
But they didn't have that. Not even in Star Trek, they didn't really have something that you just like move the star.
Yeah.
Things, yeah, you know, not, no. Like an actual holographic display.
Holograph, you know, of the universe or the galaxy. Or the
right, like a 3D holographic display of the universe or, you know, galaxy or whatever. I don't think that was really a thing that existed in kind of popular movies or things like that. They didn't really have those. Now, after he had kind of played around with this display, I guess, he heard a sound behind him, and he says that he reported that he turned and he expected to see those same creatures that he had just escaped. And but he described himself feeling pleasantly surprised when he saw a tall human figure wearing what looked to be blue coveralls with a glassy helmet. But it seemed to resemble a normal human being. But he didn't really realize until later that the man's eyes were larger than normal, and they had a bright gold color to them.
Weird. Ooh. So different looking than the three creatures that were that he's seen in like the operating room or whatever.
Right. So completely different, taller, looked like to be sizes like a normal human. He tried to speak to this entity, but he said that he couldn't understand it, or it tried to speak to him as well. Like they tried to converse, but either it was speaking a different language or he couldn't understand it through the glass helmet it was wearing. But it did manage to communicate that he should follow him, and he followed I'll refer to it as a man, down the hallway.
Don't assume
into a larger room that Walton said seemed to be some sort of hangar.
Yeah, like carried other craft in it, pretty much. Sometimes, mm-hmm. Like an aircraft carrier, but spaceships.
Right, and I believe he also said that he saw another ship in this hangar, yeah. And it looked similar to the one that he had seen out there in the forest.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You know, so it's like this was some kind of, you know, whether he was on the original ship or the ship had retrieved him as something, you could kind of put all kinds of stuff together. But
it's on some sort of carrier mothership or something.
Right. And after visiting this hangar, this entity, this man, led him into another room, which he reported contained three more humans or people who looked human. And it was a woman and two men. And they also looked the same as the man who had come to get him. So they had the strange looking features, the strange eyes. But these people didn't wear helmets. So Walton immediately said he tried to ask questions of them because, you know, why not? And he said they didn't respond to him. They just kind of gave him a dull grins, and then they led him by his arm to a small table. And once he was seated on this table, he said that one of the women held a device that looked like an oxygen mask, and she put this on his face. And before he could even try to fight back or, you know, realize what was happening, Oof. He said he passed out.
Oof.
Out. You know, didn't even ask him to count back from 100, just out.
Chloroform. Boom.
And meantime, this is going on. It's 5 days. They have like search and rescue going, looking for Travis, the sheriff.
Yeah, like
we got UFO.
Over 100 people.
Yeah, we got UFO researchers now coming in. Like this has gone like worldwide news. And
yeah, they had a real manhunt going on. They had tracking dogs out. They had every kind of resource you could find on for a good sized manhunt, and they couldn't find anything.
That's
you know? They didn't even found a trace of them.
Yeah, and like tracking dogs, like police tracking dogs are no joke. No.
Nope. They'll get you.
You bring those things out there, they will find you.
This is one of the things when people debunk this one, right? They're like, "Oh, there must have been at least one other guy in on it, and like they did it for the money for like to get UFO of the year or UFO case of the year or whatever." But to have no trace of Travis anywhere with tracking dogs and like 100 people and like helicopters and like search aircraft. That's one of the pros for this one for like legitimacy is like how many people
I've been there. I've been there for search and rescue. Like, I remember telling you boys a story a long time ago about this crazy lady that escaped from the ambulance, and they did. We got two police dogs. They did a helicopter doing flybys and everything like that, and we didn't find her, and she was like 10 minutes away at her family's house. It was
in the morning. Yeah. She was up making pancakes.
You still found her. How'd you figure out she was at someone's house?
That was the girl making pancakes in the morning, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The demon girl?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't know. She was still found.
Yeah, the family found her. Had nothing to do with the dog or the fucking spotlights or anything like that. Or the helicopter search and rescue.
I just still think it's like, that's a hard one. Like, they didn't even find trace. Like, where they said it happened, they're like, there's nothing. There's nothing. Like, basically, like, if he wasn't out here, that's what they're saying.
Well, the only way it could have been fake is if the whole crew was in on it.
The whole obviously. Crew. Had it been the whole crew.
The whole crew had to be in on it.
Well, and that's police were starting to think that because, you know, they were thinking that the group was concocting a cover up of like an accident or a homicide.
Yeah.
But like, you know, I heard reading other places, like, you could have come up with a way better
than aliens.
Like, if that was the case, a way better story than aliens. You could have been like, we saw an animal and some animal grabbed him.
Well, are we getting into debunking this? Or are we still going to talk about
No, not debunking yet. We're just saying that.
Okay.
They were searching for 5 days, no trace. They're pretty much ready to give up. And then
Walton turned up.
Boom. He's back.
All right. Walton says that he woke up on the side of the road in Herbert, Arizona, which is 30 miles southwest of where he had been last seen. And he said that he remembers seeing the craft close its door and float away into the distance and kind of take off. So he had seen the craft actually drop him there. And so Walton ran into this town and he tried to find someone to help him, but he said that the town was virtually empty. And he ended up having to get in touch with his brother-in-law at about midnight, 5 minutes past midnight. And then about an hour later, they managed to come get him and he was back to civilization.
And the brother-in-law was one of the guys on the crew.
Well,
yes.
Was it his brother-in-law at the time? Because I know he married that guy's sister, but I wasn't sure if they were already married at the time.
It wasn't his brother-in-law at the time, but it was a fellow member of the group and it was his girlfriend at the time.
Yes. And then eventually he did marry that girl, which was, so yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense.
So, but the weird thing is that, you know, Travis Walton reported that he believed that he'd only been gone for an hour and a half. He felt like he'd only been gone for a very short time, not 5 days.
Yeah. When his brothers told him that, like, hey man, like 5 days, he's like, check your face. And he had like 5 days beard growth. So he was like, oh shit. Like right there, he probably like started freaking out. He's like, How do you lose so much time?
And during the time that he had been gone, and the police were still trying to figure out what had happened to Travis, they had administered polygraphs to members of the crew, and they all passed those polygraphs. Now I know a lot of polygraph stuff has been debunked, mostly, almost 100%. You know, it's not even really admissible in court anymore, I don't think. Kind of junk, but you know, just the fact that they were like, okay, we'll take it, and then. They weren't, even back then, they weren't even be like, oh, they, why would you, I can't really explain the reasoning why they would be like, okay, we'll take a polygraph test. And like, it shows that we're telling the truth.
It did show, I think, for the most part, and then some of them were, because a lot of this stuff is taken from his book, a lot of the accounts of the polygraph. But like, when I was building houses, I built a house for a homicide detective who was the polygraph man. So they still use the polygraph.
The polygraph man.
That's what I told him, because he asked, he wanted me to hook me up to it, and I was like, no way, man, hell no.
I said, give you sort your lies out.
I was building.
They give you the option,
man.
Right, like they'll give you the option. Like, do you want to take it? Right, they can't force you to take it.
No, but I'm just saying that
it's more of like an indication of guilt. It's more of like you know, it's like, hey. Would you take a polygraph test? And if the person says no, then you're like, And if they say yes, then it's like, oh, okay, well.
I
wouldn't. Would you submit to a polygraph test? Then no, that's kind of like, are you lying?
Let me tell you something what the polygraph man told me. He's like, yes, the polygraph is not really admissible in court anymore. Like, you can't convict people based on polygraph tests. but a good polygraph operator will know when someone's lying. Like they are like 99% sure. But because of there's been so many botched cases and like precedent of like court cases over the past like 40 years have made it be that you can't use the polygraph anymore. But a good polygraph operator, this guy's telling me, unless you're like a master of like how to beat the polygraph, like this guy will know within like a dozen questions, like exactly, like pretty much your whole life story, you know?
Totally. Well, so, from what I understand, it's the person himself is the actual lie detector.
Exactly.
Right? Like the machine is reading your vital signs, right? Like your heart rate's getting elevated. You're getting agitated. That's what the machine's reading, right?
Yeah.
It's, yeah. And like they say, the only people who can truly beat those are psychopaths, people who believe their own lies.
Just no emotion. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a lie if you believe it.
Yeah. Or you're loaded up on fucking Valium.
But yeah,
somebody was saying to beat a polygraph, like you should like you keep like a pin or something, like you could keep like a something and like jam it into your finger, like while you're taking it, something weird like that.
Because then it
throws everything
makes
off.
It makes it all inconclusive because all your answers are going to be elevated, right?
Yeah,
yeah. Exactly. So it's yeah.
So all his buddies seem to pass
or inconclusive the results. So there's no like automatic fail. They're just like either pass or it's inconclusive. We can't really tell on the polygraph.
Yeah. So what do they do when Travis shows up? Throw him on the polygraph.
For sure.
Right? Immediately after they get him, right? He doesn't have any real time to kind of process what's happened or what's going on. And the report is that he failed that lie detector test.
Well, the thing was with this, though, is they went to, it was one of these like UFO researchers told them to go to this doctor if he turned up or whatever, if they found him. So they actually went to this doctor like up in Phoenix before they actually went to the cops, and the cops didn't find out that Travis was found until like the media got a hold of it. And they're like, oh, what the fuck?
And the doctor, you can use that term quite loosely because from what I understand, he was a hypnotist.
Yeah, he turned out to be a hypnotist and kind of, you know, he wasn't an actual like, medical doctor.
It's like the doctor from Simpsons.
The quack, yeah.
Are you doctor, I use that term loosely.
Yeah. So he was, that's unbelievable.
Well, it was like Futurama. I've got a PhD in homeopathic medicine. You've got a PhD in baloney.
Yeah. Did he ever say the thought process of going straight to this doctor?
What, to get the hypnotist? To get the regression?
Yeah, sorry, hypnotist.
They were
going to
do the hypnotic regression thing. I believe Travis Walton was familiar with the Betty and Barney Hill case, and he was familiar with kind of the regression hypnosis, getting the full story out of what happened. And I didn't get far that too much into the what his whole mindset was into going into that, but it's just like you want to know what happened.
Well, he after this all happened, like if it was came out that like he was into UFOs, like what 22-year-old kid wasn't at the time,
right?
So he was aware of Betty and Barney Hill and like regression hypnosis. So that goes. A lot of people use that for the debunking, like oh, it was pre-planned to go to this doctor and get regressive hypnosis before. Like at this point they didn't trust. Government, I guess, or the police.
Right.
Well, wasn't his dad supposedly abducted by aliens, and that's why he's no longer in their life?
I don't know.
Apparently, that's why. That's what I remember reading an article, and they're saying that his dad was abducted by aliens, and ever since then, he was obsessed with aliens himself.
I had read that his family believed they'd seen numerous UFOs. I didn't read anything about his dad necessarily being taken, but I did read that he was obsessed with the idea of alien contacts.
Right. And one person who really harped on the whole thing where they had kind of found out he had an obsession with UFOs and was familiar with the Betty Barney Hill guy was one UFOlogist named Philip Klass. And Philip Klass was one of the kind of big UFO debunkers at the time. And he was kind of, he was all over this, trying to debunk it, trying to do as much as he can. Now, Philip Klass actually has some kind of weird, part in this story. Apparently, what I was going into, and I was watching a few documentaries about the Travis Walton case. One of them mentioned that Philip Klass was actually close friends or had close correspondence with another astronomer out of Harvard who was also a UFO debunker named Donald Menzel. Donald Menzel actually had connections, like correspondence with the NSA.
Ooh.
And correspondence with JFK at the time, because JFK was on the board at the board of I can't remember what it's called, the board of like Harvard, like he was on one of those things. So, and JFK also had an interest in astronomy, so they had correspondence with each other, and Donald Menzel actually had a lot of contacts with the NSA at the time, and Philip Klass and Donald Menzel were best buds, and Philip Klass allegedly offered one of the men, I think it was Steve Pierce.
Yeah, the youngest one, the one that was crying.
Right. They said that he offered Steve Pierce like $10,000 to say that it was a hoax.
And he didn't do it.
And he didn't do it.
That's crazy. Because like, these guys really didn't make any money off of it.
Where did he get the money for $10,000? Because back then, 1975, $10,000 was like a good chunk of change. And this guy, Philip Klass, was not rich, you know?
Oh, so some people say that it was a tactic used by the government to try and push the story off track.
Exactly. Because that was kind of the thing that they were trying to push it to kind of debunk it. Like Philip Klass, they say Philip Klass was kind of like, looked like from the outside, like, you know, whatever, casual observer or whatever.
Right.
He looked like a good candidate to be a person who worked for the CIA. He wasn't married. He traveled a lot. You know, he had a lot of influence in media. He was well known for writing like editorial pieces and things like that. He had a lot of good credibility. And during the 60s and 70s, the CIA were heavily into, you know, getting media on board with, you know, disseminating information and kind of things like that. So Philip Klass looked, at least if you go into it, he looks like a good candidate for the kind of person that you would find to be like, you need to get the story to go away. You need to debunk it. You know,
10 grand's a lot of money.
10 grand's a lot of money back then.
Well, and here's the thing. We said that, you know, they didn't make any money, but one of the, like, the naysayers say that, like, because Walton was so obsessed with UFOs, they think he would have been aware of the National Enquirer offering the $5,000 reward for positive proof of an extraterrestrial encounter. And, you know, one of the theories is that Walter and the crew divided that $5,000 and gave the exclusive story to the Enquirer. But then even saying that, it's...
Wasn't it $100,000?
I only saw 5,000. Yeah. And if that's the case, someone coming being like to one member being like, I will double it. Right. For you to just say it was a fucking,
but they never got the money. There was never money given from the National Enquirer.
Well, I thought that the story was never released by the National Enquirer. I just found
that they knew it. So I didn't see if he got the 5,000 reward, but I'm saying if there was a reward, you know, this guy was offering him double that to be like, no, it's not. So it's like right away to me, I'm like, well, if that was your like motive behind it, was this $5,000 reward. And now one of you is being like, they're going to give you 10. Like, it's 1975. That's not like
no, fuck, this is,
I just say it didn't happen.
Fucking right.
This is it. So the National Enquirer had $100,000 prize offered for proof of UFOs or proof that UFOs were extraterrestrial. So they heard about this case. And they said, because actually, I guess Walton actually, it was three separate lie detector tests that he took. So the National Enquirer hired this one guy, his last name is McCarthy, and he described Travis and Dwayne's results as the plainest case of lying he had seen in 20 years, obviously. And then the Enquirer did not publish the story because they failed the examination. But that's, I mean, that could easily be like the Enquirer just like got a guy to like, just tell these guys that they didn't like they're not getting the money because, you know.
Yeah.
We're not giving that out. That was a joke. Sorry.
Yeah, they never really thought.
Yeah,
it
with
was
the National
Enquirer.
We ran a story
Inquirer,
about Bat Boy.
Like, yeah. I married Bat Boy. Oh, those are always the best headlines.
Okay, there's a one quick side track on National Enquirer. When I was at Universal Studios Orlando, there's a Men in Black ride, and when you're walking through, there's a part where you walk on like the second floor, and you're looking down at like the MIB pit where like, you know, all the agents sit in the movie. And if you look down and you look closely, there's one desk, and on the desk, there's a National Enquirer. And I'll post a picture of this. And if you look closely at that National Enquirer, it just says, "Man with the world's smallest face." And it's this guy with this huge melon and this really condensed little face. I was fucking howling. I was like, oh man, whoever put that there is hilarious. But that's my
great
National Enquirer story. So they didn't get the money from the National Enquirer. So, you know, what other reasons? The other reason I saw is that, you know, this logging contract that Mike Rogers had was like the most lucrative contract they had got. And they had a strict timeline. And there was going to be penalties if they fell behind schedule. So they were working crazy, crazy overtime to try to like, you know, keep on schedule, and it was looking bad for them. And you know, one of the things is that they used this as a much needed act of God that was in the clause, so Mike Rogers could avoid any costly penalties,
like
because
losing, like having Travis get abducted, saying that they couldn't complete the contract.
Yeah, and that way he avoided paying any penalties for but the
alien abduction
behind. Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? That's what a lot of people say. Like, that's their benefit. But I'm like, why that? Like, why not?
Well, I guess get two birds stoned, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah,
right.
You know,
get two birds stoned. You win the fucking money from the National Enquirer, and you get out of your shitty contract. Bada bing, bada boom.
All right,
get those birds high.
Either way, everyone would have to be on board in that truck.
Yeah, well, you tell all the boys, you guys fucking sick of chopping these goddamn fucking trees down?
Because there's a way.
Split fucking 100 grand? Let's do it.
I mean, yeah.
If
big you
dirty
were going to do it, you could just not tell some of the guys. Like, only like two or three of them would probably have to actually be in on it, you know? And then the other ones you could just throw in there for credibility, because then their reactions would be genuine.
Yeah, but what about the sighting?
How do you fake him getting launched?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I have no clue. I'd have no clue how you would fake something like that.
It's some fancy ass disco balls and fucking
some 74
fire
Plymouth
sky
weather balloons and some swamp gas or what?
Yeah,
what,
man.
What was the one from? What was the one in England
Back
we did?
The future? Is that what you're thinking about?
No, but that's
all. Oh, the Rendlesham at 74 Plymouth
74
in the woods.
Plymouth
there?
Just bouncing around out there with some lights on.
Some lights.
Yeah. Woo, woo. Like it.
Well,
yeah, I don't know.
One weird thing that I can say about this is that they did go back and visit the area where Travis had been blasted with that blue ray, and they managed to determine that that area has been experiencing a strange amount of growth. I'm pulling a Braden. Growth. So they've actually cored out sections of trees in that area, and they submitted them for testing. And this was before, like, the area actually, this was just before the area suffered a pretty big forest fire. And when they did test the cores of the trees, they found that something was really strange about those trees in that area. The test showed that the trees had experienced rapid growth, and the tree trunks that had faced the area where the UFO was reported to be seen had rings that were remarkably wide and elliptical. And they were, rather than the standard concentric rings that most trees have. And they said that the tests show that there is some chemical change to the soil itself.
Man.
Remember
when we talked about crop circles, how in the crop circle, the plants experience like accelerated growth and like weird abnormalities.
It's contagious.
Okay, so, yeah. Once one person starts, it's all dominoes.
This guy got fucking tossed. What we're approximating like 20 feet, right?
That's what they claim.
So,
Are we assuming that the aliens magically fucking fixed all his injuries from getting tossed around?
100%.
Yes. Plus, don't you not get like hurt as bad if you go limp for an impact or something?
Yeah, you're so, still
if he was already knocked out and ragdolled, like, would he matter. Not be as hurt as bad?
You're telling me this guy's going to show up without any fucking signs of trauma whatsoever from that?
He should have been covered in bruises at least, right?
The one thing I find interesting is he's got a really small, looks like a needle incision above one of his elbows, right? And there's a lot of debunking going on, being like, no one would ever, you know what I mean, put a vein, or there's no main artery or vein there, right? So why would anybody put a needle there?
Right.
Because they tested
where human veins are, but maybe alien veins are there.
Well, because they tested his piss, right? And he wasn't giving off any ketones, which means in that five days, he had been well fed, right? So people were saying, well, you know what? That needle there was probably from some type of, you know, intravenous that he was getting to get sustenance. But, you know what I mean? There's no main vein there in a human. But what I was thinking is, you never know. Maybe they have some type of highly sophisticated interosseous drill, right? That goes right into the bone, because that's what we use, right? Obviously, we can, like, we leave a lot bigger, larger hole than was left on Walton. But, you know, obviously they have some type of advanced technology, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Wait, so you can feed someone intravenously into, like, bone?
Right into the bone marrow. Is that like if we can't get an IV on you and you're fucking bleeding out and you need fluids now, we'll go right into your, like, right below your manubrium, we'll go right into your tibia. We'll drill, fucking zip, push some fucking lidocaine, and then there you go. You're ready to go.
I did not know that. That's crazy.
It's the most painful thing ever. We did it on a guy that was conscious last block. He got shot 8 times. And we couldn't get a fucking vein on him because he was fighting us. So we held him down, and one of the ALS guys just drilled right into his fucking tibia, screaming. He forgot about the gunshot wounds and was screaming because of the fucking drill. It hurts that bad.
Bone, yeah.
And then you push the lidocaine in. It's supposed to be the most painful thing in the world.
But you saved his life.
Well,
no spoilers.
We got him there alive. I don't know if he's alive now. No, he got shot. He got shot 8 times by a fucking .22. So no exit wounds on any of them.
Oh, it's like 50 Cent.
Yeah, well, it's all ricochet, though, right? Because it's 22. 50 Cent got a lot of through and through. Through and through, for the most part, if you don't hit anything vital, you're going to be okay.
That's better.
22, there's no exit wound. So that fucking bullet is just ping-ponging inside you, shredding you.
Hits your rib or something and just bounces around in there, and who knows what.
No, just fucking bounces, ping-pongs inside you and fucking just shreds you.
That's why I've always said, for my zombie gun, for the zombie apocalypse, 22... with a box magazine of like 100 rounds and just aim for the eyeball, and then just bounces around the skull, kills the whole brain. I win.
Totally.
I win. I win the zombie apocalypse.
I win the zombie apocalypse.
I win the zombie.
Fireball.
High score.
So what's everyone's thoughts on this one? Is it a hoax, or is something really happening to Travis in these woods?
Well, you know what I think. It's bullshit. Like, you know, you dig into this guy's past a little bit. Like, you listen to a little bit of that class guy. He did a little dig in his past. This fucking Walton guy was writing bad checks, was fucking found guilty of fraud. He partaked in a lot of fucking recreational activities like acid. He was obsessed with fucking aliens and stuff like that.
So am I.
He just finished. You're not doing anything fraudulent, Zell.
Yeah, but Zell, you're not writing bad checks.
Right? You're not doing anything fraudulent.
I'm not writing checks at all.
You know what I mean? So.
Andrew, you calling hoax?
I'm calling bullshit.
So you're thinking that he did it to try and either for the logging contract, or for the money for the UFO case of the year, or both? You know what I'm saying?
I'm telling you, he was trying to get fucking two birds stoned, and if it didn't work out, it was all water under the fridge.
Have you been watching the Trailer Park Boys cartoon?
How can I not be? It's amazing.
It's so good.
Two birds stoned.
Now, I think this is a tough one for me, because I'm like, there's parts of it where I'm like, it's very weird. I'm like, it's hard to get that many people on board, especially someone who's new to a crew. Like, you know what I mean? As soon as you're getting the police involved and they're like thinking that you murdered someone, if you were new to this crew and you'd be like, yeah, these, I don't really know these fucking guys. You know what I mean? Like, what's your loyalty to this lie? Especially if cops are all of a sudden being like, you know, we think you murdered him. Right? Like, you'd be like, hell no. I'd be like, absolutely not. Like, I'm not. These guys told me to lie. This bullshit. He's hiding right in the fucking woods.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen. So then I'm like, okay. So then, like, maybe let's say just Rogers was in it or just a third. But how the fuck? I was trying to think in my, like, think it through. How would you fake what you saw, right? Which would explain if you did have something rigged up. It would explain how, like, why Walton ran to it, right? Because he wanted something to happen before anyone was too close. How does he get launched 20 feet? And how does all these other people that may or may not be involved, which I'm thinking they couldn't be, or as someone would spill the beans, how would you fake that? How would you fake getting zapped and launched 20 feet? Right?
Without a massive amount of electricity, like static charge, and like you probably kill, like liquefy someone with the power of
yeah, exactly. So I'm like, that part to me is really weird. Very concerning that, like, he's failed all these polygraphs. He even was on that show in, like, whatever, 2008, The Moment of Truth, and he failed the polygraph test on this on network television in 2008 when they asked him about it. So that's, like, hard. But part of me thinks is because maybe something like this did happen to him, something happened in the woods, but then maybe he's lying about the extent and he's maybe fabricating the story. Like, maybe he's, you know, given it the Hollywood treatment himself, and that's why they're keep catching him lying. But something did happen, but maybe it's just missing and lost time, right? But he wants to account for all this stuff, so he's giving you all these other details that maybe aren't necessarily true.
All right, so you're like, mm-hmm. you're it's plausible, but you're not convinced, is what you're saying.
I think something weird happened in that woods. I don't necessarily believe Travis Walton's account of it. I believe the other five guys, but him, what he says he remembers in the spaceship and shit, I don't believe any of that shit.
Because he only remembers that through hypnosis, does he not?
Yeah, that's why I don't put any weight to that at all. Zero.
So what happened on the spacecraft is who knows.
Yeah, I believe he woke up 5 days later and was like, where am I? What happened? Holy shit, I was abducted, right? I'm going to cash in on this. Oh, this is my payday.
No way.
And then, like, and things started lying from there.
All right. I'm going to go. I'm on a similar route as that. I think it seems very improbable that all these guys are in on it. So something happened to Travis. And just like with a lot of these cases, maybe, like, if you weren't there and you couldn't experience it, you just can't believe it no matter what. Like, all right, maybe if he got zapped by the craft, which this is the only time that I think we've ever heard of someone getting, like, physically hit by the UFO or, like, its defense mechanism or whatever this bolt was. So to have, like, all your buddies in the crew, even though they're not all, like, his buddies, but they're, all, like, it's your work buddies, it's your work crew, right? For them all to be on board and no one's ever really come out and be like, yeah, we're all in on it. No one's ever really come out, right? It's always just been like there's inconclusive polygraphs and failed polygraphs. But if we just take out all the polygraphs, no polygraphs, the guy was gone for 5 days. No one knew where he was.
There was they were
searching. He ends up 30 miles away with the beard, with like a 5 days beard. And, like, they confirmed, like, through the investigation, they actually confirmed that he did make the call from the phone booth. Like, he did make the call at that same time. So, for me, I mean, I fucking alien abductions are, like, cheap. I love them.
You want to believe so bad. You want to believe.
And, like, as a lot of these cases go, like, say he did get abducted. And this, like, maybe he doesn't really remember what happened. And the hypnosis is this, like, his brain trying to, like, put it together what happened when he was unconscious. So maybe all that's not real. I think something happened to him. I don't know if it was fucking, you know, some, like, the world's full of like unexplained phenomena. Maybe like it was not an alien, but maybe like something like some weird, like, you know,
all lightning,
some weird atmospheric static charge fucking nailed this guy. And they all thought he got fucking killed. They ran away and like he got up, he stumbled away. Like he was, his mind, he had fucking 5-day amnesia and he woke up 5 days later in a different town. He's like, what the fuck? And like everyone's like, oh man, you got abducted, but you need to go to like regressive hypnosis. And he did that. And his, like, the brain's a creative organ. Maybe like the brain has filled in his whole scenario
and
for him.
Well, and his love of aliens, right?
Yeah. Like obviously he was into it beforehand. Like he knew everything about it. He was a fan. Like just like we were at 22, I was a fan. If that happened to me, I was like, I got abducted by an alien for sure. 100%. Even though I wouldn't have known if I did. So that's what I think. I'm not saying it's a complete hoax. I'm just saying maybe. And then a lot of these times when this stuff happens to people, they do see the dollar signs in the end. They're like, oh man, hey, we give you a book deal. You know, write your accounts, biography, $100,000. You know, the tour, the circuit tour and all the UFO conferences. Contact in the desert, and then boom, that's your career now from one event. So I don't know. I'm not saying it's a complete hoax, but I'm not fully convinced that it's told maybe exactly how it happened. Dan, what do you think?
So I could really go, like, I'm more leaning towards it did happen. It did. He did get abducted. My theory is that if I were these extraterrestrial entities, here's what I think would happen. That forest that they were working in, that national park, is actually part of one of like the largest uninterrupted type, I think it's deciduous or pine forest in the world.
Yeah.
It's remarkable. It's a unique. So perhaps this was some sort of kind of like cataloging vessel, not the one that he ended up waking up on. The thing that he did see was perhaps some sort of like scouting vessel, like that was a unmanned vehicle. So when he exited their car, it identified him, wasn't sure if he was a threat or not. And then, you know, hosed him with whatever the incapacitating beam or whatever it was. When it actually recognized what he was, when his friends left, maybe it took a closer look. And these aliens, maybe if they're benevolent or not, decided like, oh man, we really effed up. Like, maybe we should fix this dude. You know? So maybe they took him on board the ship. Those things, the creatures that were examining him in the first place. I know we've talked about it before that, you know, the smaller aliens are kind of grays or perhaps some kind of like they're either biotechnological organisms or something like that. They're used for, you know, because you wouldn't want to, if you had like little robots that could do the job of kind of examining, what could possibly be a dangerous organism or something like that, or has any types of pathogens or, you know, whatever, you don't know. You'd send in little tiny robots to do the job. So they have these little guys examine him. He manages to escape. Maybe that wasn't part of the plan. They identified him as not a threat. And they kind of, that's when the other alien kind of comes in there and says, hey, you know, tries to talk with him, calm him down a bit, right. Give him a little tour, maybe. Shows him the hangar. That's what kind of gets me is the hangar, and that he sees the ship that he had been, that he saw in the woods. So I'm figuring that sort of like scouting vessel from the mothership, if you will.
All right.
They knock him out. They drop him at a town that they realize, you know, they make a scan or whatever. They realize that that town's empty. So there's a less of a possibility of them being sighted and whatever, jeopardizing their mission or something even further. So they just kind of drop him off and then they're like, okay, later.
Peace.
Get out of there. So I'm kind of with Braden too, that maybe he either is embellishing some parts or even the regression hypnosis, like there's some influence from his subconscious kind of influencing what he saw or what he's describing. So maybe it's not 100% accurate. So he's not really sure when he's telling the truth or not, but perhaps something did happen and the events are somewhat close to what he describes, but not exactly true in the truest sense. So it could be something that's kind of what I'm thinking. When I watch these guys like tell the story, maybe, you know, it's been what, like it's been like 30, 40 years.
Yeah, long since this happened. Time.
And maybe they're just really practiced at telling the story. But when you do see them tell the story, they don't seem like they're telling they don't seem like they're lying. They just might be really good at it. I don't see like that. These are the most, you know, these are the biggest liars I've ever met.
Yeah. You know? That seemed a little extreme.
and this was a big thing. Like, this was a big, huge thing. And I wouldn't be surprised if there were, you know, government influences being like, we need to downplay the story. We need to do everything we can to debunk it and whatever. You know, do everything they can to discredit that story.
I hear that.
And get on that, because I know we'll probably talk about it on a podcast later at a case file about the consequences or what would happen if full disclosure did happen and extraterrestrials were found out to have existed, visited, or are currently visiting the Earth. We'll talk about that later. But suffice to say that would be a really huge thing and would disrupt a lot of powerful people's plans or whatever you want to think about.
For sure.
So I'm saying that I believe them. Like, I believe them. I would believe them. You know, when they talk about what happened after, you know, they said that he got abducted and that was the only explanation, or they felt like that was the only explanation. Like, their life was like hell.
Yeah.
You know, constantly had people come into their doors. You know, they turned down interviews from people who are just constantly just trying to debunk them and stuff like that. And I could see how that would be something that I don't know if they would have thought. Maybe they didn't think about that at first. Sure, that could happen. They thought about, you know, maybe like Braden said, they were just dollar signs, but I don't think they would have reported it and held on to it so hard if they didn't really believe in it, you know?
Right.
So that's what I think. I believe the guy.
It is definitely one of the more convincing abduction cases.
He doesn't, like, when you listen to interviews with him, he doesn't sound like he sounds like a normal dude.
Yeah, sounds like a logger.
Yeah, he doesn't sound like you know,
a proper woodsman.
Yeah. So,
that's the other thing. Like, yeah, he just tells the story. Like, he doesn't really add dramatic flair to his, and he even goes as far as to say, like, yeah, it's not like, and he also, like, a lot of things you read, like, that his friends say, he's like, yeah, I don't know why they say it like that, because I didn't feel like that. I didn't feel like I was walking into trance. I was just walking towards it. And, like, he really downplays a lot of stuff. So I'm kind of like, you know, is that a sign of a liar? Is that a sign of a really good liar that he's now adapting, like, from the things?
Psychopath.
Be like, to make it better. But it's, I don't know. It's a tough one. It's a very, very interesting case. I think we should wrap this one up for now, though. It's
look it up. It's cool.
Check, look it up. Let's get into some brand new 5-star reviews. A couple good ones. South Aussie Love by Trippin' Chicken from Australia. Love this podcast. Started listening years ago now. It all started for me right back at the fucking pyramids. Loving the regular episodes these days, too. Cheers, guys. Yet to find another podcast that makes me laugh and seriously think at the same time. It may very well be the perfect blend. # pawn time.
Pawn time.
I got 5-star, the most enjoyable prolapse of my life by XFKFDHKJFJNFVLHOIGHKDI from USA. These guys talk about alien theories with the same elegance and grace that Ron Pond combs his mustache. You guys should be Canadian ambassadors to America.
We should. Sign us up.
You hear that, Trudeau? Sign us up.
Come on, Trudeau.
Any Facebook reviews there, Zell?
It's got one nice, simple new one from, let me get this right, Sir Boosington. Just started listening today. Started at episode 1. Love it. So you'll hear this in who knows how long. But welcome to the show.
Oh, good. We've got some new Patreoners. If listen, we've been preaching Patreon forever. It's awesome now. When it first started, we didn't have lots. We've got tons now. Constantly coming out with stuff. And you're supporting your boys. Helps us do things like AlienCon. It's going to help us do move into live shows soon, because we're starting to get to that point where we want to start planning those kind of things. So get on our Patreon, help us, because maybe it'll help us get to a community near you. I see us do some live podcasting. Got some new Patreons here supporting the show. We got Matt, Dim Boots, Shaley Austin. Who else we got here? Spicoli, Kaylee Welch, Anthony Joubert, and Kyle Holiday, Ruben, Tina. Oh, we already read Tina Palmachan.
Boom.
And yeah, thanks guys. Really helps the show. Helps the show grow. Helps us do cool things with the podcast. What else we got? Zell, you got a prolapser of the week?
I do got a prolapser of the week. This week's prolapser is Oriana. She's been on our social media and she signed up for Patreon a little while ago and she has been super active. She's like a climate scientist. She seems like it at least. She gave us a bunch of stuff about climate change. She's always on our Discord, you know, and she's just a certified OG prolapser. So Zell's prolapser of the week, Oriana. Thank you so much.
Yeah, just one last thing. We've been doing this thing on our Discord. If you join our Patreon, you get access to our Discord channel. I did a little campfire chat where we just kind of, anyone could jump on, talk about conspiracies. A lot of people had some good stories. So I'm looking to do more of those. It was a lot of fun. Zell, you even popped in for a little bit to the campfire. We went on, chatted with a bunch of people, just talking conspiracies, all sorts of stuff for like an hour. So that's something you're into. Get on our Patreon and get access to Discord. Anything else, guys? Anyone want to plug anything?
Yeah. My band, Lucky Monkey, is going on tour. Come see us at a city near you across Canada. United States tour to follow, you know, in like 5 years. We'll figure it out. But it's hard to get down there. It's hard to get across the border. You gotta get like a fucking visa and all this shit. But if you have never heard my band, I'm putting a new song at the end here. We just released this one. It's called Traces of Love. And if you're a fan of 70s rock and roll, you might find that you dig this one.
As we always say at the end of these things, keep those eyes on the skies. You better catch
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object. Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.